to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio. Welcome, everybody, as you always are on Fridays, 11 in the morning Pacific Standard Time. This is the place to be to help you out with some things that might be on your mind or issues or, you know, things going on in your life. I always love to hear from you, and you can contact me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Also, we take calls today. I'm going to just take emails from you because I have a really special guest on and I want to keep the flow going here. So email me your questions or comments and I will share them on the air as they come up, possibly. And without further ado, let me get going and introduce my guest here. First of all, let me just kind of briefly let you know what we're talking about today. It's an amazing book, by the way. And the author is also truly an amazing inspiration to the world. His name is Johnny Pollard. You know who he is. You've heard of him, guys. Come on. Well, I'll tell you how to get in touch with him and find out more as well, if you'd like. But what I find in my practice, in my psychological office every day, are people searching for more. They don't necessarily want to be psychoanalyzed. They do want sort of, as we describe, cognitive behavioral therapy, where we can sort of change our thinking in order to change our lives, change our actions, change our thinking. And more of them are finding, just truth and mindfulness, being mindful of where you're at, being in the here and now, your feelings, things like that. But I'm finding a lot of my clients, patients, want to meditate, want to go deeper within, want to explore who they are. You know, sometimes when we're growing up in our lives, whatever kind of environment we were exposed to, we sort of have a loss of identity, right? Because, of course, who we are is dependent upon the face and the verbiage and, you know, the environment from our parents. And I'm not going to blame the parents. I'm not going to do that because we get to choose. Absolutely. But I think sometimes we get to choose our parents too. But that's a whole other show. We learn lessons throughout our lives. But hopefully we can get to a point where we learn how to go within and really find the higher self and connect with that. And eventually just bring love to yourself and everyone else and try to be there. Now, I know it's hard, but our guest today is going to help us do that. And again, you know, just kind of reading from the information at the beginning of this amazing book called The Golden Sequence, A Manual for Reclaiming Our Humanity, right? We're a generation trying to make sense of the world and find our purpose, but we're constantly battling an age that drowns us with information, right? So many of my clients are conditioned to be mistrusting and cynical. And like I said, it's just searching right now. We're all searching, and our hearts still yearn to connect more deeply. And we want to feel like we belong to a world that's compassionate and loving. And my guest, Johnny Pollard, is a world-renowned meditation teacher. And he studied how to unfold human potential for over 20 years in both the East and West. And he is going to help us learn how to unfold the love and have more compassion for ourselves and others at the same time. I'd also want to mention that Johnny's the co-founder of One Giant Mind, and it's the number, One Giant Mind. It's most well known for its mobile app, which is free. It's taught more than 250,000 people how to meditate, And also, it's got the Meditation Teacher Training Academy, which attracts students from all around the world. And it's really part of his commitment to making meditation accessible. So anyway, let me introduce my special guest today on the phone. Hi, Johnny. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Michelle. So wonderful to be on your show. And what a great intro.
Oh, thank you. Well, okay, bless your heart.
It was perfect.
Well, you know what? I just, I go with the flow. I'm more of an organic kind of speaker. And I just thank you for that. But I really wanted to thank you also for your book. It's called The Golden Sequence, A Manual for Reclaiming Your Humanity. And I love the way it was written. It's very comfortable reading, not difficult. Gives us a lot to think about and how to get in touch with our higher selves. And it's also based on the Vedic teachings, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So I really like what it had to say in here as well. And we can talk more about that. But you're teaching people new ways of thinking, particularly, you know, when it comes to philosophies that have something to do with the modern quantum mechanics, which is a lot like the Vedic traditions. I just, you know, isn't that the way it works, right, Johnny? So,
yeah, it is. There's a beautiful confluence between the, you know, the ancient wisdom traditions and, you know, the world of spiritual development and the science world, which is a really exciting time for us to be alive.
Oh, it sure is. So you just kind of start off and you talk about evolutionary mismatch. And you say that explains why so many of us are struggling with our lives right now. And can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, evolutionary mismatch is a term that's being used particularly in the field of paleopsychology, which pertains to the study of what we were like in our hunter and gatherer days. And evolutionary mismatch or mismatch theory is a term to describe the maladaptation of any species that is existing in an environment that it didn't evolve in. So we humans evolved as hunters and gatherers in a very natural environment belonging to tribes with very specific roles in those tribes. We found our sense of purpose and meaning in life belonging to the tribe. This way of living informed our biology, and our biology, our physiology evolved to suit this particular lifestyle. And we know that our biology evolves very, very slowly.
Yes.
And it's only been about 12,000 years since we introduced agriculture and abandoned living in tribes.
Wow.
And with the introduction of agriculture and no longer requiring to live in tribes to survive, we disbanded. We started to live in isolation in much smaller groups. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the process of being able to harvest our food and cultivate a lifestyle in isolation of each other, we were able to expand the family unit, but not be in contact with each other.
Yes.
And this whole way of living is such an acute shift in the environment in which we evolved in that it introduced a whole array of problems for us.
Yeah, sure did.
the main ones being psychological problems. While there was the convenience of not having to go out on a hunt every day and then bring that food home and then, you know, work within a sort of hierarchical structure to distribute that food and make sure that everybody's looked after and you know, whilst there was a new level of autonomy that we had as tribespeople outside of the tribal structure,
right.
We became grossly lonely, disconnected from who we are.
That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
we lost a sense of identity that was reflective on who we actually are as people.
Yes.
That disconnection bred confusion, anxiety, and over time, it's pretty safe to assume that this was the birth of the modern neurosis,
yes.
Which is when we're disconnected and we don't feel supported and we don't belong, we go into a state of fear and panic,
mm-hmm.
and because when we're isolated,
right.
Relative to the way that we evolved, being isolated when you were living in a tribe meant almost certain death.
Yes.
You know, we right. needed to survive. The way that we survived mm-hmm. Required that we belonged to a tribe and that we stayed within the tribal unit.
Yes.
And, you know, if we're ever excommunicated from the tribe, it would mean, you know, more likely than not that your lifespan would be a lot shorter. And death could potentially be imminent depending on where your tribe was. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the fight or flight response or this survival mode, you generally refer to it, you know, in reference to
right.
a saber-toothed tiger.
Yes.
You know, it's a way of,
right.
Of protecting ourselves from some predator. But what's less understood is that fight or flight response is also triggered when we are not having a sense of belonging to a tribe.
Yes.
Because when we're not belonging to a tribe, it means certain death.
Right.
And so we are existing in a world now where we, by our very nature and design, are required to belong in order to feel well and safe, and yet we aren't belonging,
right.
and we're often overwhelmed by this kind of shadowy anxiety that we can't quite pinpoint why. You know,
yes.
we can assess our lives and everything can seem all right, and yet we're still fretting and worrying about the future.
Mm.
And
true.
That seems to me to be the kind of the logical explanation for this epidemic of anxiety that
yes.
has now led into an epidemic of depression.
Yes.
And so mismatch theory or evolutionary mismatch is the maladaptation.
Mm-hmm.
The way in which we're living now doesn't correspond with the way that we evolved. And as a result,
yes.
our environment is placing too much pressure on us. And
yes, it is.
It's wreaking havoc with our existence on this planet.
Yes, it is. I so agree. Well said, Johnny. And it's like I when I see people, you know, they're on the hamster wheel. Not only are they trying to function and whatever, pay the bills and just have some sort of, you know, income. And they're also, you know, worried about their self-image, their identity, their sense of belonging, like you said, based on social media, which is false. And it's just, you know, my heart goes out to so many, you know, people I see, because we're trapped sort of in this comparison thing, especially in larger, for me, metropolitan cities, where, you know, you have to look a certain way or act a certain way or be, you know, but and if you're not in a certain cool group, you're ousted, you know, you're on your own.
Yeah.
And again, comparing mm-hmm. yourself to others who are doing their own PR, actually, you know, on various types of social media. It's really, you're right. You nailed it. It's exactly where we are right now.
Yeah. And this new neurosis,
mm.
I believe is, you know, just a part of this. And this behavior that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
this need to constantly projecting an image for social acceptance to rank within the social status scale,
right.
is absolutely a survival mode mechanism because,
right.
you know, it comes down to this basic principle of our deepest need to belong.
Yes.
And, you know, we're willing to forego the truth of who we are
mm-hmm.
to construct an identity in the name of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
We'll even sell ourselves out in order to kind of belong at some superficial level, as long as we are belonging.
Yes,
because
exactly.
the if we're not belonging, mm-hmm. we're isolated. If we're isolated and alone, we are suffering
right.
deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as a means of survival, we will ignore the causal level of our suffering. And attempt to resolve it with some band-aid solution, which is to, you know, present ourselves
yes.
as something that is socially acceptable
exactly.
in order to fit in.
Mm.
And that, you know, just sends us in a terrible destructive loop.
I agree.
It's quite hard to break.
Boy, it sure is. I agree. In case you just tuned in, you're on the couch here with Dr. Michelle here on LA Talk Radio, and I'm speaking with Johnny Pollard. He is best known for bringing meditation to the mainstream through his organization, One Giant Mind. It's the number one giant mind. And, of course, he has his Learn Meditation smartphone app. And he also teaches private meditation, personal development for entrepreneurs, CEOs, celebrities, political leaders, and wellness experts across yoga and meditation. And, of course, we're talking about his latest book, The Golden Sequence. It's a manual for reclaiming our humanity. And it's based on a lot of Vedic principles, which we're going to be talking about. But I wanted to know, I always love to find out what inspired my guests to get into writing a certain book or following. And I know you've been following these teachings for years. But what were some of the things a little deeper that made you explore who you are and what you can bring into this world?
Well, for the first part of it, you know, I was kind of forced to turn my attention inward and inquire as to how I could resolve a level of anxiety that just was completely unacceptable to me. Mm. There was a stark contrast in my experience of this kind of innocent, joyful excitement about life, and then it could flip so quickly into this kind of terrible, overwhelming anxiety and uncertainty and fear and lack of confidence. And this was as a child, and then moving into my teens, you know, I was acutely self-aware and aware of the impact that the anxiety was having on me. And for some reason, recognized that I had a choice between the two. Mm-hmm. And as an early development activity, and seek out where the light was within inside of myself, as opposed to, you know, just, you know, kind of giving in to the darkness of the anxiety.
Yes, yes.
And through various kind of intuitive processes, I found ways to kind of slip through cracks of the anxiety and reconnect with myself again.
Wow.
And it was a really interesting exploration that led into my late teens. And it wasn't until I was in my late teens that I realized that what I was doing was meditating.
Right.
Which, you know, to me, you know, really drives home this idea that meditation is really the most natural thing that we can do in order to move into the place where we, that sense of self is solid, stable, and always present. Mm. And in my late teens, there were still some issues from my past that weren't quite resolved. There was some stickiness to it, and I knew I needed some help. And fortunately, I was guided to some teachers in India. And so I went there and spent intermittent session, you know, periods of time in my life studying and deepening my understanding and application of this knowledge to really understand how we can mechanistically heal and recover from this modern condition. Mm. And it's been such a rewarding and fruitful experience for me in terms of my own personal development. And the impact that I've had on people in my immediate family and circle of friends, that you know, at a certain point it became obvious that this was something that I needed to do as a vocation, and so I devoted myself to teaching full time, probably 10 years into my studies.
Goodness.
And then upon noticing the impact that the, you know, this process that I would take people through that I learned from, you know, really great masters, I realized that there was such a need for it to be scaled. And, you know, there's always a great challenge in, you know, keeping something very pure and effective and impactful in the scaling process. So I've kind of been exploring for the last 10 years the most sort of meaningful ways to do that, and One Giant Mind is an expression of that. My new book, The Golden Sequence, is an expression of that, It's taking, you know, what can potentially be very confusing and sometimes bewildering, repackaging them in very simple bite-sized chunks.
Right. It sure is. It certainly is. Thank you for being transparent, you know, and sharing with us your journey. It's I always love to find out about people. So that's very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for you. And you know, if you were really studying these things and exploring who you are as an adolescent, that's a great jump, because a lot of adolescents aren't doing that. You know, they're all worried about who they are and comparing themselves to everyone else and trying to fit in and be cool. But Johnny went within himself and started studying. And so that, good for you.
It's an interesting thing. And I always look back on that and, you know, think of how fortunate,
yes,
you know, I am, that was just a natural and spontaneous thing that occurred.
Hmm.
And, you know, and I look at the world that young people are growing up in now, and it's a whole different ball game. There's layers of complexity that just weren't present when I was growing up.
Right.
And the challenges are just far greater.
For
that reason, I'm also, you know, really dedicated to reaching and hopefully impacting young people.
Oh, that's,
because if you can get them at a younger age,
sure,
you know, you can have set a really solid foundation for them coming into adulthood, and they can make decisions that are about really nurturing what's important to them.
I think it's really important.
Internally.
Yes.
Which gives rise to greater fulfillment.
Yes, it's so true. When my son was 9 years old, I started playing for him the Esther Hicks audio tapes.
Oh, great.
So he was like, he's just listening and taking all this in. And then, so I think that was a good influence at the beginning, you know, to help him out through.
How old is he now?
26.
All right.
So, he's very highly, in tune with, himself and enlightened and, So I'm really blessed to have that individual in my life. I'm glad he came through to teach me, right?
Yeah.
So let's get to it. In your book, The Golden Sequence, A Manual for Reclaiming Our Humanity, let's talk about the four golden insights that you talk about. How can they help us in our lives?
So the four golden insights are central pillars that define not only who we are, but the best way to live. And this makes an assumption that is, as far as I'm concerned, validated through all my work and the studies of, you know, 10,000 years of research in this particular area of personal development that is derived from the Vedic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And these these principles take into consideration that we share a universal nature, and they outline that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first of the golden insights is life is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And what this basically says is that at the baseline of our human experience is an innate knowing that our existence is sacred.
Yes.
That there is something so special about the fact that we exist.
Yes.
And that beyond our intellectual reckoning of our existence,
mm-hmm,
there is a deeper, more abstract relationship to that existence that yields a sensation and a sense of knowingness that life is precious and it needs to be cared for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we see this most prevalent in the way, you know, parents, you know, rear a child, like, grow, you know, care for a child.
Yes.
And that a stranger that would see a baby on the ground crying would immediately go over and pick it up.
Absolutely.
You know, if they're not so far removed from their humanity.
Right.
It's ingrained. So we know that life is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this sacredness, which leads us to the next of the four golden insights, in the revelation of the sacredness of life,
yes,
the first and most spontaneous response to the sacredness of life is a heart swollen with love.
Mm. Yes.
Our heart naturally just goes, life.
Right.
You know, or that new child, or, you know, whatever it is that is a symbol or an expression that is yielding the awareness that life is sacred.
Right.
Our response to the sacredness is love.
Yes.
And I define love as the spontaneous instinct to want to nurture greater connection with ourselves and the object by which we are beholding that is revealing the sacredness of life, to share in an experience with that, to further grow our connection and meaning of that.
Yes.
And then, speaking of sacred, you could probably hear my little daughter.
I do. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She's joining in saying, "You're right, Dad."
Yeah. And then ultimately, you know, with that greater connection that we have, what it yields is a deep sense of belonging. And so that's my definition of love.
So true.
To nurture greater connection, growth, and belonging.
Right.
So moving from the second of the four golden insights, so we have life is sacred, love is our nature. The third is wisdom is our power. And I define wisdom as the intelligence of love.
Yes.
If we have a heart swollen with love, then we innately know the most appropriate way to respond to life that ensures that we remain in deep connection with it, that we are serving the growth of it, and that we are also nurturing belonging, and which is the foundation of human fulfillment.
Sure.
If we are constantly in connection with ourselves, and we our heart is filled with the love, and we are able to be expressive of that love, so to nurture a greater sense of belonging with whomever we come into contact with, this is the height of human fulfillment.
Right.
And so wisdom is the way in which we bring ourselves into every relationship, every dynamic, with a heart full of love and conduct ourselves to elicit that outcome of connection, growth, and belonging.
Right.
And what we notice is that when we are embodied in this state, we have an immense capacity to have impact and influence in other people's lives, to elevate
them. Absolutely.
And I define that as power. You know, true power is the ability to elevate anybody, whomever we come into contact with.
Yes.
And so that leads us into the fourth golden insight. When we are able to lead our lives impactfully with power, it yields the greatest sense of fulfillment to us.
Yes.
The fourth golden insight, fulfillment is our purpose. When we realize that we can generate a sustainable experience of fulfillment by dedicating ourselves to uplifting whomever it is that we come in contact with whatever it is that we have inside of us, the best version of ourselves. It doesn't have to be perfect, but just an intention to bring the best version of ourselves into every dynamic.
Yes.
We are
going
to create that connection, growth, and belonging, and yield a powerful sense of fulfillment.
Right.
And when when we realize that we can conduct our lives in this way, this should become our purpose. Nothing else.
Right.
Nothing else should supersede this. And so, the four golden insights: life is sacred, love is our nature, wisdom is our power, fulfillment is our purpose, is like a cheat sheet. It's a roadmap for how we can align ourselves to our fundamental nature as human beings, which is love.
That's so lovely. And when you're talking about wisdom, which I thought was so cool, to quote you in your book, you said, wisdom is love's vehicle. We were talking about paving the road, right? So you said it's how love gets around.
Yeah.
It's like a monster truck. Wisdom effortlessly.
Effortlessly. Effortlessly is a tongue twister.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. It navigates any terrain and radiates light into the darkest of dark valleys of fear and pain. Its very presence is nurturing, uplifting, and transformational. And that's so, I love the way you write. It's very enlightening, by the way. And thank you, folks out there, by the way, for emailing me here at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I have some questions coming in, and you know, also listeners are giving thumbs ups and saying, this is great stuff. I'm learning a lot, and where can I get the book? And we'll tell you all in just a little bit how to get a hold of Johnny Pollard's book, The Golden Sequence, A Manual for Reclaiming Our Humanity, and also find out more about wonderful things that he's doing to help you out in your life and his teachings as well. So moving on now with the 12 ways of wisdom. They're all extremely important, and I was just gobbling this up while I was reading your book. So we do have some limited time together, so I'd love to talk about a few of those 12 ways of wisdom that you teach in your book. So
yeah, sure.
I love the way you describe the wisdom of grace. And you say it's the ease with which we can be ourselves when we do not need the world to be a particular way for us to feel powerful and connected. Can you talk a little bit more about that? How can we get to the wisdom of grace? I love that.
Yeah, me too. Mm. So the 12 ways of wisdom, just so there's some context for the listeners, it is the spontaneous expression that emerges out of our behavior when we are established in love, true love, love for ourselves, led by a sense of responsibility to live a life of service of others. And so when we're talking about the 12 ways of wisdom, it's something that we notice just naturally emerges in us when we're established in this experience. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk about grace, I'm talking about a level of comfortability in ourself.
Right.
To the extent that we are not dependent on external experiences or behavior of others or validation in any way for us to feel assured about the relevance of our presence in any given situation, that we are relevant, we are important, we have something of great value to contribute, no matter what the circumstance, and that we are steadfast in this certainty. And the way in which we bring that is with an artfulness that doesn't require any force or need for validation. Quite often, you know, when we see an opportunity to demonstrate our relevance, we can be fueled by, you know, a subtle undertone of desperation,
right.
To demonstrate, hey, I'm of relevance.
Yes,
I'm significant here. See me, acknowledge that, validate me, and then I'll feel comfortable.
Right.
Grace, in my opinion, is that flowing, effortless presence that doesn't require any force whatsoever to demonstrate the relevance. The relevance just is. And in time, with patience, the room gets filled with that grace.
Yes.
And people naturally and spontaneously gravitate towards us and inquire at their level.
Mm. Yes, absolutely.
The most important thing with wisdom is that wisdom waits for inquiry. Wisdom doesn't go around poking and prodding in order to create an opening, in order to demonstrate how much it knows.
That's right.
You know, wisdom moves more gracefully and quietly amidst the noise and haste, and waits for the opportunity to naturally arise. Mm-hmm. But the power of grace is so magnetic. And I talk about a story in the book when I'm describing how grace really works. It really spells it out.
Sure.
It's so potent and magnetic, true grace, in my opinion.
It really is. It's beautiful the way you describe it in your book, by the way. And some of the other 12 ways of wisdom involve compassion and creativity, benevolence, enthusiasm, generosity, friendliness, humor, witnessing, insight, devotion, discernment. And you break it down to explain what all of these things mean in your, you know, Vedic traditions that you've been brought up with, and studied so much, actually. But I think readers, you've got to check this out. The book again is The Golden Sequence, a manual for reclaiming our humanity. I wanted to just sort of bring this up quickly because I think this is so relevant, because in the 12 ways of wisdom, you talk about witnessing and you also talk about meditating regularly. So this was perfect. We received an email from Josh, looks like Josh here, says, I'm a very anxious person. I'm always working hard and worrying about who I am. I'm always fearing the outcomes and am always trying to control things in my life. I try to meditate, but I can't still my mind. What would you suggest I do? That's great. Thank you. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being so open and honest.
Yeah, I know. A lot of folks who I meet with have a hard time when they hear the word meditation. You know, they think they have to go home and go into, you know, a Buddha position or something. But they don't really have to do that. Right, Johnny? I mean,
That's correct.
How can Josh get what he needs out of calming his mind without forcing it?
So the first thing that I'll say is that there are gross misconceptions around the practice of meditation. The first is that it's about stilling the mind by using the mind. Trying to control the mind with thoughts like, okay, mind, quieten down now. is like you know, fighting fire with fire.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. And you know, there's a lot of despondency around the practice of meditation because, for the most part, people aren't being taught or trained how to actually access the functions of the mind that enable it to naturally quieten down, and for the body to move into a deep state of rest. For the whole system to align and recover from the impact of stress.
Right.
So my recommendation would be, without going too deep into the mechanics of it, is to download the One Giant Mind smartphone app. It's a 12-step course that will teach you in such a simple and elegant way.
Yes.
And Joshua, I assure you, you'll be able to do this. And at the end of the 12 steps, you will understand with no ambiguity how to meditate. This technique can teach anybody in 12 simple steps how to not only experience the mind quietening right down, but the body also moving into profoundly deep states of rest where we can recover from the stress that is causing your anxiety in the first place.
Exactly.
What we want to do is launder the buildup of the impressions of the past that are really difficult to access while we're in high levels of stress.
Right.
And the beautiful thing about meditation is that it elicits a thing called the relaxation response, which is the direct opposite of the fight or flight response. And in this experience of deep relaxation, we reset the parasympathetic nervous system and enable the body to start normalizing what it's like to be in a deep restful state. And then the brain starts to learn that, to stabilize that as its new model. And what we notice after a short period of time of practicing is that we're less confused, less reactive, less anxious about the future, and more present, feeling more confident and capable of responding to life's demands with a sense of creativity and choice. And this is all the symptoms that Josh described is just simply the outcome of being exposed to high levels of stress for too long.
Right.
And at the baseline is this maladaptation, you know, of our, you know, biological mismatch to our environment, which is, you know, a difficult thing to overcome. However, through a regular practice of meditation, utilizing this technique that's laid out in this app, we have reams of evidence of how it has rapidly transformed people's lives so that they're no longer experiencing all the things that Josh talked about. Supplemented to that experience is greater confidence and capability to meet life's demands with a deeper sense of certainty of self. And in that is described all the things that I'm talking about, the sense of love for self, the sense of desiring to want to contribute something meaningful to the world. When we're not trapped in the fight or flight response, we're free of being preoccupied with survival.
Yes.
When survival has been taken care of, what's left is the desire to want to contribute, to do something meaningful for the world that's going to better it.
Right.
And so, Josh, expect that.
Yes.
If you're going to meditate, one thing that I warn people about is that your experience of life is going to transform and, you know, prepare for some changes for the better.
That's beautiful. That's lovely. And thank you so much for that, Johnny. And thank you, Josh, for being open about that and, you know, reaching out to us. But there's some wonderful lessons you can learn. And it's Johnny Pollard's It's One Giant Mind. It's the number one giant mind. And it's a free mobile app, right, Johnny? And
That's right.
Taught more than 250,000 people how to meditate. So this is very user friendly and easy to understand, and it makes it really comfortable for you. And like you know, Johnny, the more we do it, the easier it gets, and we can do it almost every day, several times a day. Get ourselves calmed, get into a meditative state. You know, when we have breaks from whatever we're doing in our lives. And, you know, continued practice, it helps us so much. And we do have changes in our life when we start really, you know, learning how to meditate the right way and calming our minds. And it's different from getting the delta and REM stages of sleep. You know, we need that too as human beings, you know, to keep sane and healthy. But this is different. This is meditation, and this is what we need to do in between our, you know, moments of beta or consciousness during the day. We need to take some downtime. Aww. I hear you, little angel. In the
little angel, yeah. She's having a little chuckle.
She is. She's a real Ooh, she's a very high functioning being. She's very high functioning. What's she, 4 months old? You said 4 months? Ooh,
yeah,
she's chuckling.
4 months.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's such an amazing thing.
Wow.
Little personality that's emerging out of her. It's so funny.
You
gorgeous.
Know what's so cool is, and I just want to drop this in, is when we do have children, you know, we just total respect for their own little personality and soul that they bring into this universe for some reason to learn their lessons, you know, and it's just like honoring that little personality that comes out and saying, wow. This is a miracle.
Yeah, it really is so extraordinary.
It really is. So let's talk about finding more enthusiasm in our lives, because I have so many people, like Josh was just talking about, who tell me they feel like slaves to their jobs and they're on a hamster wheel of working and chores and providing for ourselves and our families. How can we find more fun or enthusiasm or just excitement about just being alive here now, conscious, and sort of stepping out of that hamster wheel mentality, besides meditation that we just discussed?
Yeah, sure. So I have a very simple and direct answer to that question. When we are able to shift our focus from only primarily serving our own personal needs to considering the needs of others.
Right.
And coming up with some meaningful way that we can devote a portion of our time to meaningfully contributing to bettering someone or some situation in our immediate environment, whether it be within our community, our family, our friendship circles, at work, wherever, where we can actually devote some of our time to contributing in a way that's going to elevate others and make them feel cared for. There is nothing like that to turn on the tap of enthusiasm.
Yes.
Once we get a taste of somebody going, oh, thank you so much for caring.
Yes.
It immediately causes an effect of reciprocity where our own hearts swell with love.
Yes.
There's an exchange, and we begin tapping into the one thing that we want. Connection, growth, and belonging.
Exactly.
It generates fulfillment. So, you know, enthusiasm is the byproduct of honoring who and what we are as human beings, going back to our tribal ancestors.
Yes.
You know, their sense of purpose and survival, but beyond survival, thriving, came from fulfilling their responsibility to being of value to their tribe. Now, you know, in modern times, we don't exist in tribes, but we can call our work group, our family, our social group, our community, our tribe, you know, whether we like it or not, we as human beings belong to each other.
Yes, we do.
And and we have an inherent responsibility to care for each other.
Right.
Now, when we take back the power of our humanity and actually act on this.
Yes.
Lead with this sense of responsibility that there is a great opportunity for me to do something good here.
Mm-hmm.
Then that sense of enthusiasm just flows.
Right. It does. It really, it's contagious. It really does.
Yes.
And it grows. And of course, all the law of attraction theories and all of the quantum theories about, you know, possibilities out there and what we can do to expand love and help others and that kind of thing. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And your book, The Golden Sequence, A Manual for Reclaiming Our Humanity, really does help a lot of people, you know, understand a lot of these Vedic concepts, which I really appreciate. And you're so loving. I mean, you live that which you speak, which I really appreciate. And the book is a very comfortable read. It's laid out easily and explains all of the concepts of wisdom and the four golden insights and how we can get fulfillment, because that is really our purpose. I mean, it's pretty hard to, we're pretty lucky to be, you know, on this plane of existence. I think a lot of us don't realize, wow, it took a lot to get here. Right?
Yeah, sure did.
You know,
just observing almost 10-month gestation period.
Yes.
Our little baby girl, you know, coming into this world. There's right. So many obstacles and challenges that,
sure.
You know, in every phase of that development, anything could go wrong. And, you yes. know, just to be born
yes.
is extraordinary.
Yes.
And we were all born.
Yes,
we were all born. And that just blows my mind.
Right. It, me yeah. too.
There's just so much in that for us as human beings to reflect on the fact that we're all born.
Mm.
We're all babies and we've all grown.
Mm.
And, you know, we all carry something so extraordinary within us
yes,
to share
do.
With the world.
Do you think generations with generation, do you think your little soul is going to be more highly developed, you know, in the spiritual sense than you or your previous generation?
I would like to hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Vedic tradition, which you keep referring to, is the ancient Indian philosophy of how to unfold human potential.
Yeah.
You know, every teacher's aspiration is to ensure that he's, or her students supersede their level of knowledge. And so every generation should always be seeking to empower the next generation so that they could be more evolved, more advanced, more capable, more emotionally dynamic and
right.
stable,
exactly.
and more fulfilled. And I think we've lost track of that. We think very short term, and I think that, you know, it's so important for us to think about
mm-hmm.
how it is that we are empowering the next generations.
Yes.
With the knowledge of self.
Yes.
To be able to self-sufficiently grow into whole adults.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we've got a world full of adults with wounded children.
Oh, yes.
Carrying around their wounded child inside.
Yes.
And, you know, so resistant and reluctant and afraid to look at that and to sit in the pain and the vulnerability of resolving the wounds of our childhood.
Mm.
And, you know, the great challenge that we have as we move forward
right.
is to create environments and conditions where we're not wounding our children.
Exactly.
And we're exactly. empowering them. And I'd like to think that the wisdom contained in the book, Gold Sequence, is
right.
a really great manual for parenting as well.
It
contains a really wonderful set of guidelines for parents, particularly new parents,
yes,
to take responsibility for their own humanity,
yeah,
and to embody their highest expression of themselves. Because ultimately, our children model themselves off us.
Yes, they do. Absolutely, Johnny. Yeah. We have just a minute left here, real quick. What is the best way that listeners can find out more about you? Your One Giant Mind. And how folks can learn meditation, your smartphone app, and also pick up your book, The Golden Sequence. What's the best way to do that?
Okay, so you can go to johnnypollard.com to find more about me. Mm-hmm. There's also links to my book and One Giant Mind there. You can go to onegiantmind.com. That's the numerical one, giantmind.com, and find out about the smartphone app and also our Meditation Teacher Training Academy. And the book comes out on the 18th of November with Bembella Books, BenBella Books.com. And you can order there. You can also get it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, right, and all good bookstores.
There you go. The brick and mortars, baby, and online. Right. Johnny Pollard, yeah, it's been lovely speaking with you. Thank you so much for taking time to be a guest on the couch today.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been all wonderful. Right.
Oh, great. Likewise. Take good care and keep spreading the word.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye now. All right. Again, that's Johnny Pollard, and he's the author of The Golden Sequence. The show, if you missed a lot of it, you know what? You can check it out. It's going to be up in the archives as soon as we get up off the air. And, of course, I'll give you more information about getting in touch with Johnny, finding out more about his teachings, learn how to meditate, and get his book, The Golden Sequence. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and as I always say, take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. Have a wonderful week. Talk to you next Friday, 11 in the morning Pacific. Bye-bye now.